Good morning and welcome to Sporting Life with Sam Kekovich and Leo Weigard. Sam, good morning.
Good morning, Leon. How are you?
Beautiful day.
Oh, outstanding. Yellow shining brightly, nice and crisp. Went for a nice stroll this morning. Let me tell you, it's utopia. Small mercies, outstanding. You know, we just get it wrong so often in this Western world, don't we? We worry about the material things when everything's at our doorstep, and it costs us nothing.
It's 10 o'clock in the morning now, and you've already been for a walk.
I've had a stroll, yes, so I had to go to the toilet at 9:45, Leon. No, that's not quite true. No, I went to the park with my doggy, my lovely wife. We bought a coffee and talked to our neighbours that also have dogs. We walked, stroll around. It's amazing the amount of people you meet in a park through
dogs.
Your dogs.
Absolutely.
We have made enormous friendships over the years with our animals and the people you meet in the park. Absolutely outstanding. It's a great catalyst.
There are exceptions.
Oh, there's always exceptions.
Our Bang Sang have had two greyhounds, Spot and Blackie.
Yes.
And we met no one.
Yes.
And you know who they beat? No one.
Well, so like my mate, we went to the dogs one day, 9 races, we had $10 left. He said, listen, idiot. He said, I've been watching this meeting, you've had 9 bets and they've all lost. He said, I've been watching this and I've been monitoring, and one thing I've noticed. He said, what? He said, that rabbit wins every race. He said, that rabbit, go to the bookie and go and have something on the rabbit. We've got $5 left, get something on the rabbit. So he went to the bookie, put $5 on the rabbit. And I'm sitting there, they go wound and wound and wound. And the rabbit wins. He said, now go and get my money. So he went to the bookie, he said, I'd like to get paid now. So he said, look. He said, you and I both know the rabbit won the race. But let's just wait till its number gets semaphored.
And do you remember that wonderful occasion at the Van Shang lunch for our trainer? Our trainer of our two dogs, their names were really Spot and Blackie, but that's what we called them. And he said, oh, yes, gentlemen, one of these dogs, Spot, is very, very good. You know, it's won 9 races out of a handful of starts.
They're good, aren't they? They're Jack Dyrisms.
Yeah, yeah.
It evokes fond memories of the great man, doesn't it?
It does.
You know, they're all by Fernando Bale. They're you know, they do this, they do that.
Don't you say good morning to another great man? He's our guest today. He's Dr. Jack Kennedy, and Jack Kennedy is from an amazing family, really. He's a surgeon himself. His father was a surgeon. His son is a surgeon. So it's a line of doctors, and also in Jack's case, of course, a bloke of an all-round sportsman. And you know the story, of course.
Well, I've been his patient for a number of years too, Leon, as our great host here has. Jerry Ryan, who we'll make reference to later on, who's still got problems with his nose, but he is the most eminent ear, nose and throat. I always get that wrong in the wrong sequence, but you know what
E-N-T.
I mean. And if you Google his name, it's universally accepted that he is the most eminent you know what I mean?
Yes, he'll have
of that particular ilk. He is just widely, worldly acclaimed. And, of course, he is the Collingwood tragic. Would you please make welcome our dear friend who's given up his time, Dr. Jack Kennedy. Morning, Jack.
Good morning. How are you, boys?
Jack, can I take you back further than all of that to Yarrawonga and your dad?
Yes.
Because, as you know, your father was doctor to my mother.
That's correct,
In the Hicks family from Yarrawonga, and God, if you went back there now, if you went back and had your time again, and you could buy some of that land along the Lake Mulwala, which no one wanted back then, you'd be sitting pretty, eh?
Well, I remember my dad paid £100 to buy the whole block of land from the, down the foreshore there where the place where they sell all the ice creams, and that is, it's going back to the next street, £100.
God almighty.
If I may interrupt, Leon, pardon my intrusion, I don't think money's a problem with Jack regarding, I know that real estate would have been a great asset, but on top of his millions, does he really need any more land?
Can you break into song and more Fontaine? More, you're so vain, more Fontaine.
Remember, I've been a punter. Remember, I've been a punter, Sam. You know all about that.
Well, talking about a punting, why don't we leapfrog that too? I know we want to do this in sequential order, Leon, because he's well structured. I'm a bit more erratic. But now that you mentioned the punt, in recent times, and when I say recent times, as much as last week, your great horse Tophain. You won the Stradbroke. You won last Saturday. Earnings of $1.5 to $2 million.
With Tats Ciara.
Yeah, with Tophain. Yeah, Tophain is a great horse. He's had a number of successful horses, Jack. You've been involved in that volatile investment portfolio that we more commonly allude to as the punt for 100 years, but you've had you've had a lot of good runners, but now you look like you've got a group horse. And now I think your trainer Moroney is even talking about the Cox Plate, which is worth about $7
million. Well, the last horse I think that won that double, Stradbroke and the Tiara, was a horse called Dane Ripper, won the Cox Plate. Dane Ripper, remember?
Yeah, Dane Ripper.
We do.
Yeah.
So now you believe in history that may be repeated, do you, Jack?
You're not carried away
with this horse, are you?
He's a pretty good horse. I mean, Sky Heist was a very good horse. I had that as well. And Arelda, the other one that broke its leg in the cup. But she's a pretty good mare. And she's only been tried three times more than 1,200 metres. And she's had two firsts and a second.
Rightio. Well, let's get back to basics. Yarrawonga, I know that you went to that wonderful academic institution in Kilmore. You were ducks of the class, were you not?
Ducks of the class, capital of the school and ducks of the class, yeah.
Well, you know, there's no need to allow. We don't need the superfluous information. We'll keep it step by step. A ducks is enough for you, all right? Well, you got to give yourself a rap now, eh? If that was going to be the case, we'd interview each other first separately. So tell me, your beloved Collingwood. You left, obviously, you left Kilmore, Melbourne University. Were you always going to be the medical professor? Was that the designed route all the way through? Or?
No, when I first, I did matriculation, got the Commonwealth Scholarship the first year, and went back the second year. It was only 15 or something at the time. Sure. And I wanted to do dentistry. I was going to do dentistry. And then someone said to me, why do you want to be looking down at people's throat and picking their bloody teeth all the time? That'd be shocking. So I wouldn't do that. No. So I eventually did medicine and went to Newman and that sort of thing, and then went to St Vincent's. And I was going to be a haematologist, you know, looking after leukemia and that sort of stuff.
Mm.
And I did the first two years. I spent 9 months of that, the first 2 years as a resident, junior resident St Vincent's, doing haematology with Professor DeGrucci. And we used to admit kids with leukemia in one day and they'd die the next day. And they started using, in 1964, they started using a drug called vincristine. And kids would survive for a week and that sort of stuff. And then their hairs fell out and all that sort of thing. It was terrible. They started to survive 6 months and then a year, come back the next year, and people went into life for a year. So that was the start of them treating with chemotherapy for leukemia. So I was going to be a hematologist.
Well, it's an emotive rollercoaster. I often marvel at, you know, people like yourself in the medical profession who see a lot of, you know, deaths at their doorstep. You know, it's almost their next-door neighbour. You know, how you cope psychologically and emotionally, it must be terribly difficult.
It is, Sam, it is. Yeah, but it's like everything, you know, you've got a challenge, you've got to rise to the challenge. And it is very disturbing to see kids come in one day and die the next day, and that was my first time, was it? As a doctor, you know.
Jack, you just about mentioned what you became after leukemia. You became something else that I think was the word that Sam couldn't pronounce, and I'm not going to try. What sort of doctor did you become?
Oh, well, then I became a haematologist.
Haematologist. What's the blood?
Yeah. That's blood. No, the intimate. What's the intimate? That's the entomology. That's not entomology. What is it?
Well, I saw something, Jack, about you on Google that starts with O and had about 40 letters after it.
Otolaryngology, head and neck surgery.
Let's try that one.
Yeah. Octogenarian.
we moved too quickly then. You went from haematology.
Yeah, so then I just did general surgery. I did a year at the anatomy school, and I got past three exams, and went to become a general surgeon. And John Connell was my sort of mentor, and I did that until 1968. I got the fellowship in general studies. So I thought I'll get a job in America. The guy said, I can get you the best job in America in the world in ENT head neck surgery. So that'll be fine. So I applied for this job in October, and I got a letter back in December, first week of December, saying, look, like, you can come over here for 3 years. We've got 100 people applied for the jobs here. We've only got 5 jobs. You can come over here and become a research fellow for 3 years between 1969 and 1972, and then become join the program and do it for 4 years. Because no one had done a four-year training in ENT head neck surgery in Australia before. So anyway, I said, oh, yeah, I didn't do anything about it. And then on Christmas morning at 3:15 a.m. in the morning, I got a phone call from Dr. Kennedy here. He said, I got a guy pulled out of our program. I need a replacement. Would you do the job? I said, I wouldn't have to start. He said, July 1, 1969. I said, fine, we'll be there. So I went back to Ed and said, Anna, what's that all? I said, we're going to America for 4 years.
Merry Christmas.
Two kids, yeah.
What a Chrissy present.
Hey, talking about Anna, and we'll get back to the doctoring in a minute, but Anna was the person that got you involved with Collingwood. You were a Pigeons fan before that.
I was a Pigeons fan and a Carlton's fan.
Pigeons, by the way, is Yarrawonga. But and Carlton, out of left wing.
That's a no-no. Yeah, well,
Anna had a nickname called Anna Weeder Woman. At the time she was born, she was a Collingwood supporter. So eventually I sort of crossed the line, you see.
Yeah. And big time.
So, Jack, tell me, when you left Assumption, I know medicine's your mainstay, but when you mentioned the word Assumption, it's obviously there's the attachment to footy, because it's renowned as a footballing, fact, strong footballing school. Did you have a footballing background or a desire to play to go on?
No, I played in the seconds at Kilmore. I was a spin bowler. I spent 3 years in the first there at Kilmore. And then first year, when I went to intermediate, the best player there was Brendan Edwards, of course. And he was the coach's pet. They said he'd never be any good because he's very flashy. Brendan Edwards.
And died recently. And for those that don't remember, too young to remember, Brendan Edwards, he was one of the first sort of running players. And showy in the nicest possible way. He was a classic athlete.
Yeah, he had 42 touches in the grand final and didn't have one handball.
Kevin Bartlett lives on. Now, Jack, we'll run out of time to cover your whole profile if we're not very careful. So we'll finish with the doctoring here, if that's okay. Apart from the fact we know that you do look after a whole lot of the old Collingwood players still, and that's very good of you. But, gee, was you at Collingwood over, I think I counted, 1, 2, 3, 4...
5, 6 decades.
Presidents, I think, went from John Hickey. Was he your first president?
You
were.
No, your first one was, John Hickey was after, Ern Clark.
Ernie Clark, yes.
Ernie Clark. And,
McAllister.
Hickey, Rose.
Kevin Rose.
Eddie.
Rose. And Eddie Maguire, and then the new guy now.
So, Jack, you served in a number of positions with the club, all right across it, of course, of being a board member. But sitting on a board at a footy club, I mean to say, there's a number of board members of, they pale into total insignificance as time wears on. But in your case, you played a very significant role. In fact, you're the master, and you played a pivotal role in the club's move from its traditional home, Victoria Park, to the MCG, where it's and where it became the leading tennis club at the G, and the development of the Holden Centre.
Yeah, well, I set up the up for Collingwood to go to the MCG. You know, the agreement to for us to play there, and Eddie was the guy who did the new place. So, what's his name? That was his baby, but my baby was I did the agreement to go to Collingwood to Melbourne MCG.
Just take me back to those early days, because I remember moving south from South and, with traditional clubs staying on their own dunghill. you know, the emotive rollercoaster it is with supporters who would die, you know, by their own four walls. That's but moving right. Collingwood was unheard of from Victoria Park. That was akin to almost high treason.
Yeah, it was. Well, anyway, you know, that it was. It was a big fight about it. And of course, they wanted to go to the new stadium. You know, the one in one over in
Docklands. Yeah, Docklands. Yeah,
Docklands, whatever it used to be called. Yeah. And so there was a big fight. That was the tussle in 1997 for the election of Collingwood. Right, I'd been on the board of Collingwood first in 1994. I replaced Wayne Richardson. In 1997, they had the second last election they've ever had at Collingwood, and I was involved in that. That was a very dirty election because I said, we'll take Collingwood to MCG. And they said, no, we want to take it to the other place. And so it was a very dirty election. I won that election, and then the next year later, Eddie sort of set up the equivalent of the new Magpies, if you like to think about that, how he changed the club.
Yeah, the Holden. Tell me the other thing, Jack. You must be immensely proud that now you're the club patron, which is the highest possible honour that can be bestowed upon anyone, and that I think is further endorsement of your wonderful contribution. You must be proud of that.
Yeah, well, I spent 22 years on the board of Collingwood, going back to 1981, after 1982, I should say, and the new Magpies came in then 6 months later, and that's nearly wrecked the club. And then I got back on the board then in 1994.
When we talk of Collingwood, Jack, you know, a bloodless coup is an oxymoron. There's always a lot of blood spillage when you talk of Collingwood and, you know, changes at the top or changes on the ground itself.
If you ever read that book, Kill for Collingwood, done by Richard Stremski, yes, it's an amazing book.
It is. Well, let's talk about the contemporary landscape. I mean to say, nothing's changed. I mean to say, there's bickering at the board level at the moment. A lot of uncertainty at Collingwood, both, you know, right across the board. How do you see it? I see you've nominated and endorsed a board member. I think it was it Miss Holgate?
Holgate, yeah, well, she took my place four and a half years ago.
Right.
And they got a different sort of. Well, there's no one else been elected. No person on the board now has ever been elected.
Right.
Or we've been appointed there, you know, all appointed. So, now you've got this thing, they want to have this election now. And that'll probably come to pass, I think.
Well, what'll happen? Well, Jeff Brown's got a lot of momentum. I mean to say, if you go to walk the streets of Collingwood or walk the streets of Melbourne, Jeff Brown is front and square. I don't know where you sit on this or where the actual situation lies, but how do you see it all unfurling?
Well, Jeff Brown hasn't announced, you know, who his group of people are going to be, and I presume he's going to go for seven people, whatever else, and come on with a special election.
Well, it'd be reasonable to assume, pardon me interrupting you, but knowing Jeff Brown, you know his background, he'll have some genuine heavyweights on board, and they'll have great appeal and the necessary expertise to run an operation. So that's a no-brainer. But I wanted to ask you, as a dyed-in-the-wool Collingwood supporter, I know it's all destabilising, but how does it fit with you and how does it sit with you, the contemporary or the incumbents as they are now in the quarter, and to have this impending incursion of Jeff Brown? Where does it sit with you? How do you see the club in general?
Well, look. We've had a lot of trouble at Collingwood, starting with when Eddie stood down. There's problems there, and that was just reverse racism, in my opinion. But anyway, that's everything they want about that. But you know, they appointed a committee to look at how racism at Collingwood. Not, you know, to me, I've been there for all those sort of times, and you know, I don't remember there were a few cases of the ones they brought up and so on. But really, we haven't got just constant racism at Collingwood, never have, you know, any more than anywhere else. And so that started off, and then of course, you know, then we've lost, Buckley's gone now, and so there's a problem with people wanting to know what the hell's going on in the place. And I think there'll be a showdown pretty shortly.
Yes, interesting to see how that pans out. And, of course, us waxing on about it's not going to change it one bit. The one issue that's going to face whoever runs the place is that there's an ever-growing problem with the diversity issue. So that the government, for instance, will pinpoint places like Collingwood Footy Club because they're high profile, and make sure that they have 40% of women on the board. And I don't know how you do that in a democracy. If you have a vote, the members have the vote. They're not going to vote as if they're going to have 40% women and 60% not, or whatever the percentages will be. So it's a bit difficult. How do you achieve all that?
Well, the AFL wanted that some time ago, 4 or 5 years ago, and Collingwood, we now have got 40%. We've got 3 women on the board. Well, 2 women and one woman who's not qualified to be on the board yet.
What's wrong with meritocracy? Why isn't the best person? What's the matter if there's 90% women, if they're the right people?
That's the point, Sam, but the government are pushing this diversity thing, you know, and I don't know what they're going to do to the Netball Association. Well, does that have to be 40% blokes on blood if I know?
Well, that's a good point.
What about having some men on the women's committee,
on
the women's
board,
right?
Well, that's right.
Yeah, good one, Jack. I can see. I think we might leave that one alone for the time being, Jack, until we're on air for the next ad break.
I tell you, talking about ad breaks, I should mention Mitchell and Print. Jack likes to read occasionally, and Mitchell and Print, you've tried that print, haven't you, Jack?
What's that?
Mitchell and Print. The fine red wine?
The Jerry Rhines.
Yeah. Jerry Rhines. We happen to be broadcasting direct from Jerry's opulent edifice here, the Prince of Wales in Fitzroy.
Are you? Is that where you are?
That's exactly. Yeah. And dare I say it, we're just imbibing a little tincture at the moment of that Mitchelton print, which is a delightful one that you and I have often embarked upon in the wee small hours of the morning.
Have taken a little bit
of
our times.
Now, Jack, can I take you back to Collingwood in a different sort of way? I remember being with you on more than one occasion, in fact, on a regular basis, at Baron Ruthven, the Brownlow medalist from Fitzroy's Hotel. Opposite was the Channel 7 Theatre, where they used to put all their live shows on.
Of course,
6 o'clock closing, everything was shut at 6 o'clock.
Yep.
Nobody's allowed in, apart from those who were in and they couldn't get out.
It was three shorts and a long ring. And 3 longs and short rent. The cop was coming. The cop would come and do the boards, and the boys would all be rammed into the one little room with the dining room. Because if you're in the dining room, you were fine.
But if you...
Bill Collins and his mob were sort of crowded out of there because the cop would come around and take his money and go. Shouldn't say that. But anyway, that's what happened. We were there till 6:30 in the morning.
That was Baron Ruthven's, yeah. And down the road was Butch Gale's Birmingham. And on Sunday mornings, after training Sunday morning, which was about 3 laps on the ground at Brunswick Street, they then come up to Brunswick Street. And of course, again, no trading on Sundays. And I was up there one Sunday having a few sherbets, and somebody from the country was staying in the hotel. Imagine what that was like. And and the place was rocking. There's double parking out in the street and everything. A jazz band.
Sunday morning. Some bloke from the bush said
to me, "How do they get away with this? Where are the police?" And I said, Butch walked past it. "Hey, Butch, this bloke wants to know where the police are." He said, "Over there, ask him." They're over there with
behind the bar serving.
But what I was getting your answer, Jack, was the John Wrens, the Jock McHale, senior and junior, Sugar Roberts, all great mates of yours and mine for that matter.
Yeah. That's right. All used to drink down at the Baron's pub.
Yep.
And then he moved over to West Melbourne over there.
And then
Saturday night, they used to have a gay club.
That surprised a few people.
Gay club.
Alan Ruthven and his wife Shirley ran a pub in Spencer Street, Melbourne, which was a gay pub. And he said...
Only on Saturday nights, only Saturday nights.
Yeah, and he said they... The pink dollar, what are they called? The pink pound?
Yeah, pink dollar.
He said, it's very, very powerful.
Jack, you mentioned names like Jack Wren, you know, which we know, you know, kind of won those four premierships because of his influence. But anyhow, that's an aside. I know you're a good Catholic boy, large family. The influence of Archbishop Mannix.
Unbelievable.
Elaborate.
Unbelievable. He was a fantastic person. He lived just across the you know, the Raheen. You know, Raheen was sold for $1.5 million to the Pratts.
Well, why would that surprise you? I mean, to say the biggest real estate company in the world is the Catholic Church.
I think the Honourable Grace had disbanded. The new Archbishop's got ideas of get away from having the parishes. It's one thing to have hubs and things, you know.
Well, he wants to have greater appeal to the flock. That's why he's getting a one-bedroom apartment and, you know, giving himself a more, you know, more human touch, as opposed to living in those, you know, opulent mansions where he's totally disenfranchised from his loyal gathering in here.
No, well, there's Raheen 1, Raheen 2 and Raheen 3. That's been built just across the road from us, Raheen 3. That's a huge building. And that's next to Caritas Christi, you know, where they people go to die. But now they've built a whole lot of units there, 130 units across from us there.
Unbelievable. So, Leon, those hotels that you were alluding to where all your players, you know, Rutford and Butch Gale and all those, was that a given at Fitzroy that the players would attend every Sunday?
Sunday morning barrel. You have the barrel.
Sunday barrel was huge in the air.
And Fitzroy had the services of Honest John Gilbert.
Remember?
When that barrel was finished, the idea was that everybody would go home. But they wouldn't go home. They'd go to Butch Gale's pub.
Butch Gale's. And they run raffles every morning, don't they? Big raffles are those Sunday mornings.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the same bloke went a lot.
World of Sport. Remember World of Sport on Sunday morning?
Oh, mate, right.
The barrel's down there after that.
The South Melbourne barrel was massive of a Sunday morning, and at North Melbourne. Dodger Ryan, we had Freddie the Bat playing the piano, Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck. You couldn't believe what they did. These were grown men.
Talk about Sunday mornings, Jack. I don't know. Look, black and white television, Michael Williamson, he's the quiz master. They got a quiz going. And the idea was every time the footballers would come on and they'd answer a question correctly, they'd get another present to carry in their arms. So Graham Fellows from Collingwood, big tall ruckman, he's got his arms full of bloody salami and
Petra oranges
and stuff.
His dawn is good.
And the question was where is the Khyber Pass? You can see the surprise on his face. The Khyber, you can't say that on television. And he's going. Yeah. And Michael Williamson, I think it was Michael Williamson, said, the Khyber Pass, where's the Khyber? Oh, no. And Fellows was clearly embarrassed. And he's saying, over the back, you know, it's the
bam. He turned around.
Yeah. Jack Dyer asked the bloke a question on Channel 7 once. He says, where's the black hole of Dakota? Honestly, it was a must watch television. You know, talk about being tutored at home. Yeah. It was just unbelievable. They were just institutions, weren't they? World of Sport in those days.
And the roast Sunday roast was just gone out of fashion now.
What about that?
You have knuckle. To be there every year.
Remember the knuckle in the oven? Mum would just, there'd be a race for the oven to get the knuckle off the leg. There'd be three sets of arms in there. You get singed every morning. My index finger was dipped in water for 3 days.
I'm one of four boys, but Leon always wanted the white meat, you know, from the chook.
Yeah, well,
remember, I didn't get any of that other stuff.
Remember the roast in those days, Jack, just to evoke a few modern memories? Yeah, when they were served, unless you ate it within 3 minutes. The outer perimeter of your plate would resemble the boundary line of the MCG. You know, it was all the fat, all the mutton. It would be unbelievable. You could bounce the ball on it. But anyhow.
Jack, going back to the Collingwood days, the 19... 90 and 2000. Obviously highlights for you.
Oh, yeah. I've seen 13 losing grand finals. I missed the 19... we were in America for 1970. Missed that one. And the great debut, 1990 to 2010.
What about the heartbreaks, Jack? It must have been poor Fonz Kyle.
Bobby Rose. Bobby Rose.
Bobby Rose.
He's my favourite, Bobby Rose. I was a Collingwood man when I was
I was a mad kid for the Collingwood supporter.
We were in America at the time, when after Washington got knocked out, McKenna got knocked out before half time. And, that's why we lost that game. And anyway, I didn't know until a week later, because we used to get a message. It cost 50 quid to ring up by phone and say, oh, hi, lovely day, bang, in the finish. So we used to get a thing from the Sun, and then it arrived a week later. And so we found out Collingwood got beaten.
Gee, where were you in LA? Where were you in America, LA?
Iowa City, Iowa.
In Iowa?
Iowa City, Iowa. They had 2,000 beds there, which is the equivalent of Royal Melbourne, St. Vincent's and Austin, the whole lot of them together. And there was only 3 million people lived in Iowa. And they used to bring patients in there and they'd live there and just be seen and visited and so on, and they'd go back out the sticks again. I was very much the sticks in those days, but it had the best ENT head and neck training centre in the world.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It was unbelievable, yeah. I was very lucky. I got trained like a Rolls Royce there and came home and started that as a specialty, ENT head and neck surgery in Melbourne in 1973.
And spent 50 years voluntary work at St. Vincent's.
Yes, he's been a genius, benevolent, to philanthropy.
50 years.
Well, I operated for 51 years and doing ENT head and neck surgery, and a few years before that doing general surgery. But I was thinking about Tony Shorey. He had 13 times had his nose broken. And, because Greg Williams used to see a bang first.
Well, it's that sort of nose you could really give a nice buffeting to.
And I said to him, look, Shorey, you're going to retire, so when you fix, I'll fix your nose up properly so it's got a good shape and all this sort of thing. Anyway, he became coach of Collingwood, and he was running around down here at Yarra Bend, and he was yap, and smack.
Into a tree.
Knocked into the thing. I went to America in January that year and came back, and I saw Shorey. I said, Shorey, I said, you bastard, you went and had your motor six by someone else. He said, no, Jack. He said, I ran into the bloody tree. I was talking too much. And he dropped and smacked the back of the side.
Now, Jack, will you, you're probably, I don't know whether you're over this or not, but people would be intrigued to find the story out about you.
On 1989.
And the plane landing in Hawaii.
Unbelievable, yeah. Yeah, I'd taken the boys to Aspen to ski, and we came back through Hawaii and stayed an extra day. And we left there about 12 o'clock at night, 1 o'clock in the morning, I should say, to fly from Honolulu to Auckland, New Zealand. And it was a Boeing, the big Boeing, and it was one of the old... I'll sort of be done up, but it was United Airlines. We got 23 minutes out of there, and I just went up to take that. They said, look, it's going to be bad, and I said, it's slow trip because it's a lot of storms and so on. Takes a while to get up to our thing, so we'll give you meals later on. So I put my hand out to pull the blind down, and all of a sudden, bang, outside the explosion, there's fire, and there's bloody... everything going on. John was sitting in front of me. We do those two back seats, you go back to where he said one by each one there. And he said, what's going on? I said, you better start saying your prayers. We're going off. And so 23 minutes to get back to the airport, he put it down. We thought we were going to die, no doubt about it.
It blew
a 30 by 10 foot hole in the side of the plane. And 9 people got sucked out.
9 people got sucked out, died.
So the roof was left off. Wasn't the roof lifted off?
No. There was another thing. Why when a host just got pulled out through the head, yeah. But that's a different one.
That was
a smaller plane.
Jeez. And another experience, didn't you land a plane once, Jack, on a way to a resort island? The bloke had a heart attack, the pilot, and you had to land it?
No, for God's sake. No.
Oh, no, I'm making these up, but it sounds
that's,
great.
That's Houdini.
Oh, no, that was Biggles at school. I read Biggles.
The Air Adventures of.
Biggles, yeah. That's Biggles.
Jack, now, it'd be remiss if we didn't meet the great Dr. Jack Kennedy and really meet the superstar of the industry, and that's his son, Richard. Richard, I know he slides under the screen because of the famous dad, but Richard is a superstar in the business. Yeah. He's widely acclaimed.
I don't operate anymore, but I still consult, or assault, whatever you like to call it. So I still consult patients, and if they need an operation, I send them to Richard, but Richard does most of it. He's excellent. He spent a couple of years in America training over there as well.
Jack, well, I'm here to tell you, Jerry Ryan rang me last night, as I said, asked Jack why his nose is still not working properly. Well, he's still got...
He might drink too much, Fred.
And my nose, you had to go at my nose 19 times and I'm still in a gurney.
Oh, 19 times, be bugging you. I only had one go at you.
No, it's fantastic, Jack, you're a genius. Leon, I know we could go for hours with this guy, but I'm sure he's got a consultancy there and...
Lovely rooms in East Melbourne and
St. Francis Building overlooking
the. I'm going to go to Thoroughbred Club lunch today.
Thoroughbred. Okay.
At Il Duca, our little restaurant.
One of our favourite spots.
Oh, that's a great Jack, spot.
You'll be a life member there soon, Jack.
Well, I've been there last Thursday, Saturday, last Thursday, and then the following Friday, the next day, Friday. Saturday, and then I'll be going on today.
And you got the audacity to ask him you should have bought that bit of land at Yarrawonga for 100 quid.
A great pleasure having you on our program, Sport and Life, Jack, and more strength to you. We've enjoyed the company of Dr. Jack Kennedy today between Sam and I. You're on Sport and Life, and we'll look forward to your company again next week.
Okay, just one thing I just want to tell you. My grandfather's also a doctor in Ireland.
Oh, is that a fact?
Yeah, he was a doctor in Ireland, and because he was Catholic, he couldn't go to the Dublin University, so he went to Edinburgh and Glasgow, came back and did 1 year in the girls, the obstetrician gynae sort of stuff, and then came out here in 1889 to Cobram, and he had 8 kids in Cobram, and 3 of those are doctors, and another's a dentist, and one of the girls married a Dr. Horgan out in Preston. They had kids, and I got 2 boys there, and the other one was Cousin, a fellow, Judge Cousin. And he had 2 kids who were doctors as well.
So why couldn't he go to university in Dublin, in Ireland?
Hey?
Did you say...
In Dublin, Ireland, he came out, couldn't get a job over there, so
So Cobram, and that's the Yarrawonga connection, I guess.
Yeah, well, then the 4 boys went, the 3 boys, one went to Cobram with grandfather, one went to Shepparton, talked to Dick Kennedy, and Dad went to Yarrawonga.
Gee, wonderful.
And the rest is history. So it's 4 doctors in a row.
Yeah, 4 doctors in a row. And now my sister's granddaughter is now a paediatrician in Adelaide. Her name is Jarvis, and not Kennedy, but she's half Kennedy.
Well, I was telling...
generations, yeah.
Jack, I was back at Yarrawonga a month or two ago for a family gathering, some of the Brookses and Hickses and all that mob. And I noticed along the street they've got the plaques in the ground for what each of the shops used to be, you know. This used to be a carriage place, and this used to be a butcher's or what, but they've missed out where your dad had his practice. They haven't got a plaque there for him.
I'll tell you why, because his practice was down in Piper Street, which is now the old veterans home. They bought that we had a tennis court and a huge area there, and the veterans club bought the Kennedy household in Piper Street.
Oh, I was talking about the practice, though. That was in...
The practice is in the house.
Oh, was it? I had the wrong building in.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll take that back. All right, well, that big splurge before about farewelling you was a bit premature.
A bit premature, particularly the family trees.
It was the Kennedy Park. Kennedy Park, I had to plant that when I was about 10 or 11, come home from Kilmore for holidays, and my old lady would make me plant all these bloody cars. That's Kennedy Park.
What about the airport in New York? The airport in New York, is that? Oh, that's a JFK. So.
Hawaii was the one. Hey, good on you. More strength to you, Jack, and we'll catch you again real soon.
Good on you. Thanks.
See you, Jack.
Dr. Jack Kennedy.